Hey, everybody. It's Ruth here for the Tiger Mather Report for Week 9 recap. Chris should be with me momentarily as we're sitting in on a very cool evening after a hot weekend around the Motor City, where it was Friday. I think it was like 95 degrees. And so wherever you are, hopefully you are having a good evening. Well, thank you.
Exquisite.
That ball is gone. Such a all time.
So, yeah, I'm doing pretty well, Alex. Thank you for joining us on usual Blood Right as well. I just got back from bowling, and our team won the second game. I bowled my average, so that's all that matters. And there's Chris with me right here. But, hit the batting cages earlier. Was it Thursday at softball? It was a very active weekend. And got to see quite a bit of baseball today. Watched the entire Erie Seawolves game. Between that and the Tigers, whatever that was. Yeah, I had to split TV in. So in my office, I have a TV over here, and then I have a second monitor over here. So it's a whole station of baseball. So sucked for that this weekend, and good to see you again here, Stan, as well. Chris, how's your evening going?
Good, yeah. We had a lot of traffic at the pool this weekend, Friday and Saturday. Lots of kids playing weird games that I don't know, but somehow they all know.
The classic case of 500, like you just toss them?
No, yeah, they were playing this weird, it's almost like any, meeny, miny, mo, but for fun. Like, they just keep doing that until there's only two kids left. We saw the new Spider-Man movie today with Harrison. That was awesome. Yeah, other than that, lots of baseball, too.
What's not awesome was Toledo this week, by the way, who, just for a fun fact, were outscored 54-18. That's right. I said that correctly. Toledo was outscored this week against the Indianapolis Indians 54-18. And during that stretch, they were shut out twice and they scored. So 12-6, they lost the first two games. They gave up 25 runs. Third game, they won 4-1, got shut out 11-0. Won 10-7, but the game was actually really much in hand when Erie had two back-to-back home runs in the ninth on Friday. That was yesterday. And today they got shut out 7-0 by a pitcher that we had no idea the Tigers signed.
Oh, yeah, Ryan Sampson, or what was his name? Yeah, they're scrambling. They're scrambling to find bodies right now. The kid from Indy Ball, you said, wasn't even, like 28.
It was like he was another indie ball signing because the Tigers had another one, didn't they, a few weeks back?
I don't even remember. Let's see what's his name. Have a name.
By the way, the Guardians put Plesac designated for assignment. Okay.
You guys saw that. He's got a 7.5 ERA in the AAA this year. He got a 7.5 ERA in the majors. But with how injured the Tigers are, they may just want a warm body, honestly. It's tough. Brought up Olsen. He did better than I think just about anybody could have hoped for. Certainly better than I had predicted. I feel bad about that, but good on the kid because I didn't mean to be mean to him. I just thought, see guys make their major league debut and usually they're nervous and they don't pick well. And he was just as cool as ice. But then Fido went down. So that they we have no idea where they're going to start.
So Garrett Hill did get the call up. So Hill probably will get the ball on Tuesday, which is he hasn't been pitching. The velocity has been there in Toledo. It's not that the command is still off. And Stan emailed me about, he was wondering if some of us Toledo. And at first I just thought of like, it wasn't, Stan, I really thought that because based off how Toledo's been doing their rotation this year, kind of like bullpen arms and just seeing what they have. At first I just thought maybe it's just the way they're putting it out there. But since the beginning of May, it's just been in terms of a offensive standpoint too, the bats have not been there. Parker Meadows has been the most consistent bat they have had in terms of he's batting at least 280 per week, where Malloy has fallen back behind the pack. We'll get to the numbers here shortly as well. But another thing to look forward to for tonight, Erie, quality starts. They have five quality starts this week. Yeah, that's right. Five quality starts. It's four, right? Because today they didn't really count the fours and go five innings, right?
Yeah, they had fours went five and four.
Right.
He was pitching twice this week. And Madden went 5 or 6, but it wasn't a quality start.
Right.
Gave up 5 runs. But yeah, they pitched. The Tigers took off the reins from the starting pitchers over the last week, started letting guys go 6 innings. And basically everybody near it did it except Flores. And that was because he was pitching twice. But we saw a bunch of guys, a couple guys do that in West Michigan as well. So finally getting some more length out of the starting rotations, and maybe that'll help. But Toledo, they don't really even have the guys to do it. I don't know how many guys in that rotation have even gone 4+ innings this year. This week, the longest start this week was from Jack O'Loughlin, who just came up from high A. He gave him 4 1/3. Nobody else can do that or do more than that. So, yeah, they need some bodies in Toledo. I don't know. It just feels like something's up. Something's wrong there in Toledo. Like, they went 6-20 in May, and they're 1-5 in this series. They were like 8-10 games above 500.
Yeah.
And then it just, the wheels fell off in May. And I don't know. You know, we haven't been down there in the locker room. I don't know if we would be able to figure out anything anyway, but we haven't talked to Anthony Iaposi. So I don't know if there's something going on with the mood there or if it's just the lack of talent. But yeah, you touched on it. Like, the offense hasn't been there and the pitching's been basically awful for 6 weeks.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, is that even with Malloy, you see some sort of regression a little bit because teams have figured him out and he hasn't been able to adjust or adjust as of yet. He probably will adjust at some point. I'm not say, you know, never say never, but it has been a case of where he has more walks and strikeouts. And this is a guy that takes pride on walking a lot and has not been there at all. And just looking at it in even limited duty, Donnie Sands is the one that's been hidden a little bit in terms of when you look at some of the exit velocity numbers, which are a little getting slightly better, but still it's one of those things where I try not to get in terms of depth. Like, they're talking about this great, and I was talking to somebody about this today, about this great quote unquote depth the Tigers have as far as pitching goes. There we go. There is a slide for today. And I just been able to see they got Hill going. You could see that a little bit, but yeah, the in terms of what Parker Meadows has been able to do consistently over the last few weeks, it's saying that to me that that's a good sign. The rest of it, though, based off what we hear and everything, there's going to be a couple changes in Toledo coming up. I'm not going to go what they call in the biz a tease, but there's going to be certain things developing based off what happens the next few weeks over in Erie. And yes, Jonathan, to answer Harrison's question, yes, Jonathan Davis was traded for
Brady Allen.
Brady Allen. Okay. Okay, so if I think of The Flash, Barry Allen, Brady Allen. Okay, sorry.
Okay.
All right, so my DC comic. The Bloodhens could not, in terms of even bullpen-wise, I was looking through, I was trying to find something to put on there, and I couldn't find anything that was just looking at the starting numbers you mentioned, Chris. It was bad.
Yeah, they couldn't keep other teams from scoring runs, and they couldn't score any runs. It was really frustrating. Brendan White had a nice week after he had a really rough month of May with some of the worst BABIP you've ever seen. It was he pitched 13, 14 innings and had 25 strikeouts, but also gave up 29 hits. One of the damnedest things I've ever seen. And then Eddie, I think, responded to you with an point about maybe some of it has to do with just a whole bunch of guys playing out of position on defense. And that'll put your BABIP up when you have balls in play, don't get converted into outs. But yeah, Brendan White, it's okay. But other than that, yeah, like it's tough to find anything to really hang your hat on from the. So I've got starters gave up 27 runs, 22 earned in 19.2 innings last week. So an ERA over 9. They've got a 6.49 ERA as an entire staff over the last month. And over the last 2 weeks, it's 6.83, which is, you're talking 96 Tigers territory, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, some of the worst pitching you've ever seen. So I don't know. I don't know what they do to fix it. I do know what they do to fix it. There's a whole mess of arms in Erie, but we're going to hold off for another couple of weeks because playoffs and such. And the Mudhens, I believe, are like 8 or 9 games out of their playoff hunt in Erie, I think, is a game up on Altoona right now. So yeah, an offense in Meadows. He's just chugging along. It just hasn't been nearly as exciting as it was last year. He's been like a steady 80 to 90 WRC plus all season. So you're just hoping that he'll get hot one of these weeks. It can pump that up. But it's not necessarily the worst thing in the world, because I don't, like, if you were tearing it up, I guess they'd bring him up and play him, but I don't know. The outfield is one spot where they've been seemingly okay. Well, now that Riley Green's hurt, I guess they probably would. They wouldn't mind if Meadows were tearing it up so they didn't have to play Tyler Nevin and stuff. But I don't know. He's been okay. Malloy has really continued his malaise. Since basically the first month of the season. Yeah, he's hitting, he's down to 270 on the year now in the batting average. And he didn't hit that bomb the other night. But beyond that, yeah, it's not a whole lot of damage this week. I want to say what, three gets?
Yeah. And
4 hits, 4 for 23.
4 for 23. And what's even interesting is the fact that there, even, it was funny, I think it was Friday, yeah, or yesterday when I posted the home run that he hit after Corey Joyce hit one. He then, everyone was still like, call him up. I'm like, did you not pay attention? Have you not been paying attention at all? You just see a Malloy run, like, call him up.
Yeah, nobody cares because of how badly the Tigers are performing. They just want to see new bodies. I don't know what you do when those new bodies come up and perform just as poorly, though. Probably what would happen. So it's a no-win situation there. They did, Lipsius continues to have a very bizarre season. He went, 5 for 23, no power. He's not striking out, but he's walking at a decent clip. It's just a weird season for him. And who else do we got? We have, Kieran Carpenter. That's an interesting one, right? Kieran Carpenter, he didn't do much this week either. He played, I think, 5 games, 3 for 21, something like that. A couple walks, some strikeouts. But I don't think he's played the field yet. I think he's been DHing only. And he doesn't seem to have that pop in his bat right now. It makes me wonder, along with him playing DH, it just makes me wonder if the shoulder, I wonder if it's not necessarily bothering him, but I wonder if it's something that can't be completely fixed without an off season of rest or surgery or something. But that's all reckless speculation, right? Don't like to do that except when we do it.
And usually we come with some sort of science behind it. Yeah, that is a little strange to see, because comes at the worst time where the Tigers need all the offense they can get. They got swept by the White Sox. And then to make matters worse, they lost on a grand slam today. That's the ultimate kick in the dick, isn't it? It's just, I don't know.
Is that worse than losing on a walk-off wild pitch off the umpire's mask?
Back-to-back. Okay, how about this? It's back-to-back kicks to the groin area. That's the way this weekend was for the White Sox. I'm digging a couple questions in here. Elton, good to see you live on here as well. Is Donnie Sands a replacement to Rogers or Eric Haas? No. His exit velocity is still not there. It's one of those things, you look at the box and go, oh, he's hitting 412, but you look at the quality of the hits, it's still below average in terms of just exit velocity, those kind of advanced numbers. So unfortunately, Harrison, I don't see that kind of coming as some sort of solution with that. And we'll get to Dingler later too, because he also had a rough week down in Erie. But it's one of those things where I think that the catching situation maybe be a little bleaker. I don't know. It's, I don't want to say it's bleaker, but it is startling a little bit. I want to say, because I feel like Chris, and this is, well, before we get back to Leo, I just think about this today. You go out, you get Sands, you get all these minor league free agents, and they've all just been plug and play. But you've seen Crouch. We've talked about Crouch this season, and there's not much else. Alfonso's not really a catcher long term. Maybe he might be a DH or first baseman type, but I don't know, man. It just seems really strange. That it's just like from a year ago now to now, it just seems like the depth is questionable at the moment.
Part of that is just like the ups and downs of being minor league prospect. But yeah, Donnie Sands, he's been hitting well lately. The last 3 or 4 weeks, he's actually been getting a lot of hits. But like I said, there's very little power there. I think he's got one home run. He looks like a guy who should hit for power, but his swing, his swing seems to be tailored to making contact off the end of the bat and kind of looping balls. I don't know. He walks a little bit, doesn't strike out a ton. He's not a great defender. Like, he's an option in that he's a body on the 40-man roster. case Rodgers or Hoskins hurt, but I don't think he would be an upgrade over either of those guys. As sad as that is to say, I think Rodgers hitting 160. But yeah, and then Dingler has just stagnated for about three seasons, and Josh Crouch couldn't hit in Double A, had to go back down to West Michigan. Part of that was because they wanted Dingler to get every day at bats, but part of it was because Crouch was not doing a great job catching the pitching staff there, and he also wasn't hitting. And yeah, below that, it's Mike Rothenberg is in Low A, hitting well, but he's striking out a ton. They're on the injured list now. They just brought up Archer Brookman, who is an unsigned free agent out of Ohio State. You got Papirski and Knapp there in Toledo, but we were talking about this earlier. It wouldn't be a huge shock if the Tigers go catch early in the draft. You don't draft for need, but if it rolls out that way, it wouldn't shock us.
Yeah, and that's what I was getting. I'm glad you picked up on that, Chris, because that's something that I was leading to, because here we are, we're hearing that the Pirates might go with Blankford, and then LSU pissing me off to no end because you know what? Let's put Skews out there for 125 pitches after we're winning. The game is well in hand. Complex League, by the way, Alex, starts tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Yeah,
tomorrow at noon.
Yes, thank you. So
we don't have the roster, though. I was looking at the roster earlier, and they don't have it updated.
Yeah, $5 says they won't have it up till Tuesday after the game. Seems like that'd be the case. No, but Paul Skews pitched 125 innings in a game that LSU had well in. Why the hell was he throwing 125 pitches? I'm not sure. Oh, hey, Elton. Thank you, sir. And honestly.
Whoa.
Yeah. $20. Thank you. What am I fun? You know what? You know what? He deserves. Actually, Elton, you deserve this one.
How about that?
I gave him a Mel Allen.
Nice.
You know what? And also, I got another one for him, actually, because this one we don't play. I haven't given him. This is the other one I have. What is it? Oh, man.
Give him his due.
Give him his due. Well, yeah, this is the one. Give him it. No, that's the other one. Damn it. Oh, here it is.
So the Complex League starts tomorrow. Elton, interesting comment here. He's talking about Scott Harris, and there's some people who are already very highly critical of Scott Harris, which seems kind of strange. Now, listen, things haven't worked out great overall. I think the Tigers are probably about where everybody expected they would be. It's been some ups and downs, but they're with six games under 500 right now, something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, his point is that Scott Harris is making moves left and right. And that's true. A lot of them are just picking players up off the scrap heap all over the place, which is, I think it's one way to find guys at this go. But yeah, it's hard not to look at the lineup and go, he didn't do a whole lot. But we don't know the inner workings of the Tigers this year, but we're assuming that basically he had about $20 million to work with. That's what they spent. And then they set it on Boyd, Lorenzen, and Shreve, because I guess he looked at the roster and said, we need more pitching depth. And you know what? They've needed more pitching depth. They're at the end of the rope now, but they're being able to stay afloat here for the first couple months. But they don't really have any offense to speak of, and we've seen that with Riley Green going down. Boy, the team doesn't do much of anything. 3 runs in 3 games this weekend. And the other guys he's brought in to hit, Eitan Vierling, other than McKenstry's been good. Seems to be cooling off a little bit right now, but Nevin, Ibanez, those guys haven't done much of anything. So it's just tough. It's tough to try to rebuild an entire offense on the fly. I'm not, you know, super positive or super negative about him. I just give him a little bit more time than, I don't know, 4 months on the job or 6 months or whatever.
By the way, there was two interesting things that happened over the last couple of days. First and foremost, Josh Lester got his first major league hit with the Baltimore Orioles. So congratulations to him. So props to him. And Tony Paul was on Justin Spiro's show, I think Thursday or Friday, got tagged on the tweet. Shout out to the Justin Spiro show. And they talked about that Tony Paul is saying the Tigers are going to spend money this offseason. And Tony, we've gotten to know Tony. And Tony's not one of those guys that's full of crap. He's one of the best at what he does. And not to get too far off the minor league topic, but I thought that was important to bring up because it would make a lot of sense. Because if you look, I will give, in Elton's correct, at least Harris is trying everything. It's like literally it's, he's looking at the kitchen bare, the kitchen cupboard, and it's bare. It is bare. It is, he's doing everything he can. And you, that is the reason why you see something, for example, when Sawyer Gibson Long missed a start, it was because he was working the bullpen developing a cutter, which came out pretty well, which we'll talk about that a little later, because the Tigers see something in him. And at some point, you might see him in Toledo soon. Who knows? But they are at least trying, like, you're hearing, like, this is, like, in terms of, maybe because my sources have gotten better, I don't know, but some of my sources are, is it just me, Chris, or they, I feel like every day I'm telling you something new.
Yeah, it depends on what you mean. But yeah, like, there's, I don't know, yeah, I can see, and we get this because of what we do, but the one thing Scott Harris hasn't tried is calling up all his prospects, right?
Yeah.
Or put everybody wants. Hey, bring them up. Let's call them all up. That's the one he has tried, because I think they don't want to expose these guys right now. For whatever reason, they don't think they're ready. We've seen this with baseball all over the place. You just talked about Josh Lester. Josh Lester toiled in the minors forever until he hit like 70 home runs. And they're like, all right, fine, we'll bring you up. And they gave him like 6 at bat. And that was it. Baseball people see things differently than we do.
Yeah.
As much as, and we try to pay as much attention as we can, but I some baseball people just look at a guy swinging and say, "Oh, that's never going to work," and that's it. And it's all right. So I don't know. And yeah, but I think June will be a big month in terms of things happening. I'll say it like that. We know that just from we talked about earlier about Erie's playoff run, but I think some of these veterans on the Tigers are going to be gone before the end of the month. Some youngsters are going to be replacing them. And it's going to be like that. There's going to be a concatenation down through the system where we're going to see guys move up and move around. But it's just going to be, I think, a couple more weeks.
Yeah. And especially because Erie's in the thick of the playoff race right now. And we talked about this last year, and it makes a difference to the morale of a team in the playoff hunt. You got to give props to Kenny Alvarez over the last few weeks with the starting rotation, which has been pitching a lot better as of late. And go down, they don't ever go down in Richmond and go 5-1. Erie doesn't do that. Erie has always struggled on the road down there. Something about that place, something about the unicorn song, which I don't want to talk about that. Anyway, that was in my head all day. But
they wouldn't.
Go ahead.
Obviously, they treated Richmond like Indianapolis treated Toledo, right? Like they just demoralized them and demolished them. It was, what did they out? They outscored Richmond, I've got it here, 46-12. 46-12 in 6 games. It's a shock that they lost any game that week. Yeah, they're playing really well on both sides of the ball.
And Bradley had a question in our YouTube chat. Do the Tigers have the worst international prospects in baseball? Fewer international prospects get past Lakeland. Bradley, that's a good question. And tell you the truth right now, it's not looking. We can talk about Campos. We can talk about a couple things. But as of right now, the track record outside of where they've gone everywhere else, talk about Adonis, you talk about Suarez and all that, the track record right now does not flat out. If I'm going to be honest with you, Bradley, you're on the sun. You're flat out correct. It's not looking, hasn't looked good yet, because you look at other teams. I was looking at the Padres earlier because I'm doing an article for FanSided. I'm doing my top 15 prospects of Major League Baseball for FanSided version 2.0. And their top 4 prospects, Chris, are all under 21. All under 21. And it's just,
David,
it's
Salas.
Salas.
Jackson Merrill.
Yeah.
Robbie Snelling. Is he up there? Or Dylan Lesko?
Yeah.
Hey, all right. Good to be. Nice. But Padres prospect out. Yeah. And they have the kid that I saw this year. He pitched West Michigan opening day. Iriarte. I've forgotten his first name. But he was nasty. He was like 95, 96 with a slider and a really good changeup. I mean, it's been like 4 or 5 years since I've done a deep dive on the international market. But back then, the Tigers were bottom 5 in everything. It was a war from international players, players in the big leagues, all-star games. Since then, a couple guys have gone on to the all-star game. Garcia and Gregory Soto, I think, worked out for them from the international market. But right now, yeah, you're pointing at Campos. You're pointing at Kader Montero, basically. Christian Santana was a guy we were really excited about, but he's broken this year. We don't know what's going on. Abel Bastidas has started playing a little bit for Lakeland. It's too early to say anything. We've seen some flashes from Adinso Reyes and Jose De La Cruz, but nothing consistent from them. And that Javier Osorio, the guy they spent all their money on last year, like one of the biggest opponents has ever had, one of the worst debuts in all of the Dominican Summer League. Raylan Perez had an awesome debut. And I've always just been kind of like crossing my fingers that the Tigers get one of these guys one day, that they get not one of these $2 million bonus guys, just a six-figure bonus guy, 100 grand or whatever, who pulls a Fernando Tatis Jr. and just goes, oh, you know what? I'm going to grow 2 inches and get super athletic, all this stuff. Because sometimes that can happen when you get a 17-year-old. Raylan Perez sounds promising, but I will have to see.
Yeah, there's Elton brings up a good point about, he said, Harris has no loyalty. Young guys in the minors, he has no loyalty to. The only ones he actually show love to is Justin Henry Molloy and Keith. All the rest show him love or show him first. And he's right. But I look at it this way. Look at guys like, for example, Eric De La Rosa, who was progressing really well. We thought he was progressing. But then we're hearing a term that we have not heard before, which is put him back in developmental camp. So it's, what's that? And it's, oh, you're not performing up to the Tiger standards. That's another, I can't think of any other way to put it, Chris. We're seeing it at a lot of players that were, at one point, we were talking very highly of. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you're noticing now that there's been a regression, or not regression necessarily, but they're like, oh, you don't fit our standards? Psh, go. Out.
Yeah, and I think it's been a bit of a sea change there that we talk about it before. We've talked about this for years and years and years. The organization will tell you what they think of their players, how they treat their players. Not necessarily, but like how much they're playing them, where they send them. Do they start back in AA? That's interesting. That tells you what they want these guys to prove, or that they weren't terribly excited about them beginning the year. We thought Wilmer Flores was headed, definitely taking it for Toledo this year. He starts back in here, we're like, what's that all about? And so far this year, he hasn't looked as good as he did last year. I don't know if one caused the other or what, but in some of the guys, this is the case with every organization. They give favored status to their draft picks. If you're a later round draft pick, you just have to keep performing like crazy to start to get noticed. The Cary Carpenter effect. But when the new regime comes in, they don't care. So we've seen Gage Workman basically had his playing time almost eliminated. He was playing once or twice a week there for a couple weeks, almost a month, basically. He's playing like 4 or 5 times. He's back in playing more. But Daniel Cabrera was the same situation. Former second-round draft pick. They sent him to the developmental list. They don't particularly care about these guys, their draft status. They want them to perform, which is, I don't know if it's tough love or it's like a completely different set of eyes and they just don't think these guys can play. But yeah, I mean, I think that Elton has a point. You know, Harris wants to see these guys perform before there's no draft status-based promotions. It's all merit-based. Theoretically.
No, and there's guys like, for example, you see like Andrew Navigato had a really good week. He might be the running for player of the week in the Eastern League. And even with Trey Cruz, for example, Trey Cruz last year was, I mean, in terms of like prospects status, was soured a little bit as far as, but then I don't like whatever happened in the offseason, when he talked about management questions about the offseason, it sounded like he just became much more engaged player. And it's showing on the field. The results are showing. He had another leadoff home run. Finally, as Greg was talking about on the broadcast, here he has found themselves a regular lineup a little bit. And Trey Cruz is always on the top and has performed very well. And so this is a guy who last year was, as far as organization goes, organizational quote unquote favorites, wasn't there. Now all of a sudden it's a different set. There's guys like even, I'm thinking of, for example, Jake Holton too. Jake Holton was, I don't want to say it sounds like a dickhead thing to say, but an afterthought, but Holton was there, but you weren't sure what his role is. Now it feels like it's more and more of these players that were on the fringe have gotten better. Navigato has been somewhat consistent. And even with Corey Joyce out in Toledo, he's been serviceable. But then Mr. 300, Johnny Valenti, not sure what's going on. So it's really bizarre in some cases with some of the prospects.
Yeah, you know, with Cruz, I think in his 8th home run of the year, was it? Tied his total from all of last year. He has a lot of things that you like in a leadoff hitter. He walks a lot. He's got a little bit of pop to get you out that early lead. He'll steal a base every now and then. He He's not a great hitter for average, but he hits enough and hitting from both sides of the plate and playing all over the field. Valuable guy. So it's nice that they figure that out for him. But yeah, that was kind of the story of the week in Erie, other than the great pitching, which we talked about, I think. They touched on it, that basically everybody. Mitch Ferner had three runs. Ty Madden gave up 5 runs for 6 innings. But Montero, 6 scoreless, 9 strikeouts, I believe was a career high. Clear Gibson Long, you mentioned, 6 scoreless. I think he had 8 strikeouts. And Flores had 9 innings, 14 strikeouts, 5 walks. But we'll take those 14 strikeouts. That's a good sign.
Yeah.
So the pitching was great. But what I was saying on the offense, you got it there. You had Navigado had a good week. Colt Keith had a good week. Jake Holt had a good week. Trey Cruz had a good week. Just about everybody. Nobody had a crazy good week, but they were all producing. Ben Nelgeri, 6-for-23 with 6 RBIs. Litzel Perez had 7 hits, 3 doubles, 3 walks. Scored 6 runs. Gage Workman, classic Gage Workman, only had 2 hits, but they were both home runs. Even Dylan Dingler, 5-for-25, 2 doubles, a homer. No walks and 10 strikeouts. But they all produced a little bit. They were all putting the ball in play. And that's just it's a tough lineup when you've got, literally, you go up and down. There's 7-8 guys any night that hurt you.
Yeah, now that you have the pitching to go with it, it makes them probably one of the better teams in the Eastern League. They did well against Somerset. And Somerset's usually the cream of the crop when it comes to that. And I know that Altoona, correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, they lost a couple of players to Indianapolis that moved up to AAA.
Yeah, so Henry Davis just moved up. So
thank God.
That's a big one because he's been destroying the Eastern League. Former first overall pick, Henry Davis. So that should help. But and Erie is heading into Bowie, right? Bowie is in last place. Not heading into Erie. Bowie is coming to Erie, I should say. But what's that? Dan Bowie.
I didn't say anything.
But theoretically, you'd like to think that the Seawolves are a pretty good spot right now, but you still have to go out there and do it. They've got the guys who are playing. One of the bummers is about Richmond. We talk about this every year, is the camera angle from center field is just garbage. And I don't know if it's there must be just direct sunlight right into the camera and they haven't done anything to fix it. There's no hood over or something like that. But for the first 3 innings of any evening game, you're basically looking through like the basement of a vape shop. It's impossible to see anything. It's pure white steam. So they have to get bad angles from behind the plate or whatever. So I cut together, we got Flores' first outing, got Herter's outing up there, I got Montero's that's going up tonight, but they're not the best looks at these guys. If you want to go see them on the YouTube page.
By the way, somebody mentioned, shout out to Elton mentioning the Kale Org reference, and I remember Lynn Henning getting pretty excited about him. And another guy he got excited for, everybody remember the Nate Cornejo experience. For some of the veterans in this group that are watching us tonight on YouTube, there's so many times where I can think of guys that, like the Tony Giordano, who I made a reference to last week, that was somebody else that was getting some more prospect love. And yeah, it's interesting to see some of those names called Kel Ord. Wow, that's a flashback. Good call there, Kelvin.
Yeah, Kel Ord was Dave Dombrowski, I remember saying, it's like, he had all-star tools or whatever, but again, you just couldn't hit. Somewhat essential when you're trying to play baseball, but
also because his dad was a former major leaguer, correct?
His uncle too. I think his uncle was the better one.
Didn't Garth, or was it Kale, lose a couple of years because of a Mormon mission, correct?
He was, I believe so, yeah, because I think he went to, is he an Alabama kid? I think he went to Alabama.
No, I think he was Canadian. He was from Canada, though, right?
Oh.
Yeah, he was born in Toronto because his dad was playing in Toronto when it was a Blue Jay in the early 80s.
Yeah, makes sense to me.
He went to Alabama.
But I think he only played there for 1 year going off on that mission.
Yeah, that's correct. It was. Yeah. Cornejo, to be fair, Michael, even Cornejo was, before he got injured, wasn't good.
Didn't he have one of the worst, like the lowest strikeout rates of all time?
Yes, yeah. In terms of like guys went out here, but in terms of Warren Flores, Stan, I was asking about his changeup. He is throwing the changeup more, Stan. He is not, it's not a pitch he's going away from, but in terms of he's commanding that better with a slider and the fastball. So I think he's finally getting that more in his repertoire, if you will. I don't know, for me, it looks a little, it's getting peppered in there more, but not as frequently.
Yeah. I think he's working it in when he needs to. It's not, he doesn't have great command of it yet. It's not like a, it's not a pitch that he can count on yet, but he's working it in enough. And to me, his stuff just looked better this week. It looked like his fastball was more electric and more late ride to the zone. His breaking balls were sharper. I think he's just starting to, I don't want to cross your fingers, but it looks like he's starting to get back to his form from last year where everything's just a little bit sharper. I did have that 5-walk game on Tuesday, which was not great, but stuff looked better. He was just having trouble harnessing it. Then he did today just for 4 innings.
Yeah. And that was something that was encouraging, that he was able to go out there at least a couple times and be somewhat, let's say, effective. He was effective. And to see some of the glimpses come back, the strikeout stuff, that was a positive sign, because if the Tigers, as far as, like I mentioned this earlier, their rotation this year has been, the Erie rotation's been through a lot of ups and downs. They got a new pitching coach, got a rookie pitching coach. So there's been a lot of different types of kind of hand holding right now with their coach and what have you. And it's just good to see that. They needed this week, and they've come into their own.
Yeah. So Stan with an interesting question there. It's basically trying to, how do you tell which pitch the pitcher's doing? Is that what he's asking?
Games, how do you know the pitch? Simply put, his changeup is, when he comes in on right-handers, has fade action to the bottom right. So you look at the catcher's glove like this. So you take this off.
Yeah, one of the easiest things to do, and if you don't get this in every minor league broadcast, but having the velocity on there is a great way for you to know what pitch is going. Obviously, it's going to be a fastball for the most part, the superhuman. And then changeups tend to be 8-10 miles an hour slower than that, and breaking balls more like 10 to 12. But you know, a lot of it has to do with the movement. You can tell sometimes a changeup, like Roger's saying, that changeup will almost looks like it stops and drops away from a right-handed pitcher, just floats down and away, whereas a breaking ball will curl in towards a left-handed batter, things like that. There was a great article on Baseball America recently that our buddy Jeff wrote. Yeah, Roger's grabbing the magazine. It's also online if you have for the subscription. But he was just saying, hey, here's how you know how to know what you're looking for. He even had a flow chart in it, didn't it? Fun little flow chart. Who doesn't love a flow chart? But yeah, it's one of those things that just takes practice. Even sometimes we'll be at games, we'll be like, was that a changeup? No, I think it's a slider. We don't really know. It's sometimes you're not paying full attention. So
yeah, they even go over the grips. Honestly, if you get a chance to read this on Baseball America, and the only reason why I'm showing this to the camera is, like, if you go to it's worth the subscription. I got the print version this year, and there's another Baseball America magazine where it's like highlighted for some of the stuff I do for show prep. Because a lot of times for example, when we were Erie last year, when there was a couple times where I was like, it looks like a slider. And was it the guy who was doing the Hawkeye? I go, oh no, that was a change.
Yeah, the cutter. Yeah, we were out there for Flores against Altoona. Flores got blown up early in the season.
That's right.
And you were working the gun, and I wasn't. I was just looking, and I couldn't tell that he was throwing a changeup at all. No, and you were like, oh, he threw a couple changeups. Probably no. All right, I wish part of that was just our angle, right? We were a little. Really see, you're right behind the catcher. It just takes time. You figure it out eventually.
It's a tumbling action. It tumbles in on the lower on lefties, and lefties, he doesn't really throw it a lot to lefties. It's more of a right-handed pitch. But because the reason why we were talking about this last year, he has two types of sliders. One is that sweeping slider, that like that horizontal, horizontal movement, and then he has one that has more vertical movement.
I mean, with Flores, I consider it just more a traditional slider and a traditional curveball, I think. That's the way I describe it. Whereas, they've altered the way that they describe pitches now. They put it into sliders and sweepers. Sweepers tend to be a little bit slower and have a lot more horizontal movement. And those have been in all the rage over the last couple of seasons. I'm trying to, like, Brendan White throws more of a sweeper than a traditional slider, I think. His really, some of that has to do with the arm angle. They're like on a continuum, right? There's a cutter, there's a slider, and then there's a sweeper, and they're all kind of there, and then the curve just has more vertical. But a lot of times, guys will call a pitch something when it looks like something else, and you just go, all right, whatever. Okay, yeah, that's your curve. Okay, sounds good. So sometimes it's just go, all right, it's a breaking ball, or it's an off-speed pitch.
Yeah, and especially when you ask them during an interview, they give you a weird look. Yeah, well, that's that. And and you're like, oh, sorry, it looks like this. But then they realize, like, that happens. And Jeff Sanders wants to know if Cole Keith's the truth. Absolutely, Cole Keith's the truth.
Well, what's what do you mean by the truth?
If you talk about, is he the second coming of the, is the next big prospect that's going to break out with the Tigers? Or, excuse me, break out with the Tigers, period? Yes, he has the potential to do.
Yeah, what the thing I've been thinking about lately is, like, who's the number two prospect in this? Who do we put at number two once Colt Keith graduate? Man, I they might just be waiting until the draft so they can graduate Colt Keith and go, here's my number one. Because it's tough right now. Like, nobody, I had Jackson Jobe stayed healthy, probably would be him. And if he comes back healthy, maybe it could be him. It's just because of the upside there. And had AJ Hitch said that he was doing everything that they want him to do and looking good. We moved Parker Meadows up to number two based heavily on look good he looked in the spring, and he's just been adequate so far this year. Ty Madden is an awesome first start, hasn't looked anything like that. Justin Henry Malloy had that great start, is coming back down to earth. Jace Young is heating up.
He hit 565 this week. We'll get to West Michigan shortly.
Yeah. Justice Bigby? I don't think so, but who knows? Maybe.
Well, good. You consider maybe Roberto Campos, but after,
yeah,
upon further reflection, we'll talk about that too. Because there was,
are we done with Erie?
Yeah, we're done with Erie. Yeah, we're gonna move on here, or maybe even Chris Myers, who also had a good week. He hit 563 this week in 16. He went 9 for 16 in five games, so he had a pretty good week. I don't think he's number two. I'm being, but good former Toledo Rocket doing his thing.
Yeah, it does feel like the line now between number two and whoever number 30 in the system. I don't know. It could be, it depends on, maybe we're just paying too much attention. Come back at the end of the year and go, okay, he's number two. But
I think Sergio might be onto something, though. I think if Sergio says Jace Young, number two.
Okay. All right, we can discuss this. All right, yeah. So Jace Young started the week 0 for 4 with 4 strikeouts, first game on Tuesday. And then after that, he went 13 for 19. With what, 3 doubles, 2 homers, 3 walks, 4 walks?
Yeah, 3 RBIs, walks. 3 walks and 6 strikeouts.
10 RBIs. Raised his batting average from 221 to 274 in 1 week. Yeah, I haven't been basing my opinions on him on the stats as much as how he's looked. But he has looked better, too. He's getting the fastballs more. He's getting the elevated fastballs more. He's not missing breaking balls low and in as much. And we saw something similar with Spencer Torkelson 2 years ago, where he got off to a really slow start in the beginning of the season in West Michigan. And then he was hitting 235 1 month in the season. And then he had 2 good weeks and was off to Erie. He left West Michigan hitting like 315. So maybe Young is in the middle of that. If he hits well again next week, then the breakout could be real and he could be off to Erie. Because we thought West Michigan was in this. They were playing. They were pretty close to first place. They're still in second place at, what are they, 28-23? But they're now 7 games behind the Great Lakes Loons because the Loons won 10 games in a row before losing today because the Dodgers are an unstoppable player development machine. They have quality players up and down the system. So it wouldn't shock me if, you know, once West Michigan is out of it and Young is still performing, if he's up to West Michigan or up to Erie. So good on him. He's probably going to be... week. I don't think anybody can stop it.
Quiet there, Chris. For whatever reason,
you don't. Oh, how about now?
All right, you're good. Say that again. Just say that last part again.
I said it was a highly productive. I wouldn't be shocked if he's Midwest League Player of the Week because it was a highly productive.
Yeah, and even on the side of the in terms of the pitching side, West Michigan's had strong pitching all year, and it continues to be so. Gary Burhan, strong start. Six innings. He, along with Wilkio Hernandez, both went six innings this week, had good quality starts. Trey Melton also in his, had a much better start than he did in his debut. But as far as rest of the, in terms of the bullpen wise, if in case you're interested, the Cardinals' pain has come down to earth a little bit. You got hit, beat up today. But one guy that also had a pretty good week was, in terms of not necessarily bullpen, but Derek Skubal pitched a pair of scoreless innings today with just a long one hit and was efficient. Didn't really have to go through too much of a struggle in his rehab start. And Trevor Michael continues to do what he's supposed to do as a veteran draftee. A pair of scoreless innings, has struck out four. So he's adjusting to high A ball very well. And he continues just to be a solid bullpen guy. Jordan Marks also a pair of scoreless innings this week. And that was good to see. But yeah, West, Great Lakes is just ridiculous. There's not a spot in the lineup on there that just has struggled. They're not bad. They're just a, they're deep. Yeah, Carlos Pena just was not, period. A lot of stuff was hanging up in the zone. Michael brings up a really good point about Young. If Young slow shows with the bat, it would be a good idea to give him some first base experience. It seems like moving guys around and looks like a first baseman. But I wouldn't see that as a realm of out of the possibility. And yeah.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me if he moves around a little bit. I think it's comparable to Cody Clemens, I think. Maybe slightly less athletic. But Clemens played a little third, played a bunch of first. But Young is actually a very good second baseman. He just doesn't have a ton of range. But if he's got a shot to make a play, he makes it 99% of the time. It's really impressive. But yeah, it's just not super quick twitch athleticism there. But it wouldn't shock me if they play him at first some down the road, just to, yeah, they have somebody else who can play better defensive second base, but they want his bat in the lineup, which is, it's going to be a bat in the profile. If he's playing all over the field, that probably hasn't worked out there. But yeah, wouldn't hurt. They tend to not start moving those guys around until a little bit later. Unless you're a middle infielder and they move you, they give you some second, give you some third, give you some a shortstop. But like a middle infielder traditionally, like a Kreidler or a Workman, is more of a second base only guy like Young.
There is one of the things that talk about the offense too, before we forget, who didn't have a bad week was, or who had a bad week, by the way, Isaac Pacheco, 1-for-21, added a buck for 0.48, which is, yeah, he's in some sort of funk right now. No, Sergio wants to know if anything about Jacksonville. As of yet, we haven't heard anything as of yet. To catch up here on YouTube a little bit, there are a couple of questions in here. Elton asked about Miggy. Should the Tigers try to get him retired early? He's going to get his world tour. He's going to go in. He's going to go in Tribe Called Quest style. He's going to have a world tour.
They can play him even less, but I don't think that he's going to team whatever. He's just going to hang around. This is the bet they made. Maybe had they continued playing really well, or they go on like a 15 game winning streak or something like that, that maybe something could be done there and a phantom trip to the 60-day IL. But I don't think they would do that. They're just going to have to ride it out and try to find spots to use them, which is what they've been doing.
As far as Jeff Sanders in the YouTube chat, if Dingler keeps going, I would have no doubt we have a spot for catcher given what we've seen lately. Dingler, look, Dingler today, if there's one thing about Dingler, the last couple weeks he's had really quick at-bats because teams are just throwing sliders and he's not picking up on spin and he's just four or five pitches and he's done. And either he grounds out or he strikes out. And if you give him a fastball, he'll hammer it. All day long, he'll hammer a fastball. But it looks like he's been having problems picking up spin as of late. He still commands a good game. He did a good job filling in for Rodriguez, who got hit in the toe. He was down yesterday, and it looked like it was a pretty rough injury for him.
I think they put him on the IL because they brought up another catcher in there. They brought Burgess.
Yeah. Colin Burgess. And those catchers take a lot of beating, but they looked... At first, it didn't look that bad when you first saw it at first, but then you see the replay. Yeah, it was bad.
Yeah. We loved Dingler when we saw him in West Michigan that first year. He looked so good, and we've always been fans of his, but yeah, it's just you make it, make a cross in the middle of the strike zone. I don't know, 8 inches wide, 8 inches wide. If you throw the ball in there, middle, anywhere in that, he'll hit it hard. Anywhere else, and he's going to swing right through it or miss it. I don't know. It's a real bummer. He's striking out like 35% clip. To me, we talked about this before. He's basically Jake Rogers part two, maybe a little bit more athletic. But that's going to be the kind of hitter he is, I think. He may run into a couple home runs, but he's going to struggle to hit 200 in the big leagues.
Yeah.
Unless he makes a big change.
Yeah. And again, it just begs the question what the Tigers will make do at three this year. They might be this. We were joking about this a few weeks ago about Teal, because I almost put him in my mock draft, and Chris and I were going back and forth about it. I'm like, are they going to try to do the smartest guy in the room thing, joking around? But the possibility now might be real, because he has been a very good player in the ACC and has put up some really good numbers. Now, again, I have to see what he does in Cape Cod with the wooden bats and all that, but still, if those two options at outfield are gone and you don't want to go with Clark or the guy from Texas I'm drawing a blank on right now.
There's Walker Jenkins from North Carolina.
North Carolina. I thought it was from Texas. Maybe because
there's Walker.
Yeah. Jenkins.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is the Tigers were seen heavily with heavy hitters, their scouting director and AGMs at Kyle Teal's series, Virginia versus Georgia Tech. So they were there. People just assume, okay, that's them doing due diligence. But there is a thought that if Langford and Cruz are gone, that they won't go after schemes and they won't go after the high school guys. So they're looking for the third best college bat. And that might be Kyle Teal, the catcher out of Virginia, who left-handed hitter, has some power, has some hitting ability, gets on base, is athletic enough to play the outfield. He's interesting. It would be rough to pass up on the high school outfielders. Maybe they just don't like those guys. I don't know. So that's the way the winds are blowing right now. So you just got to hope that somebody works out a funky deal. The Pirates go after Clark, or the Nats take Skeens, or something like that. Or the Tigers might be picking Kyle Teal, the catcher, third overall.
Something tells me LSU is going to screw me over somehow. I feel like LSU is going to do the same too again. Whatever. I don't even want to get into it. I'm just so, when I saw that, what is this? This is not Rice University, okay? We're not old school Rice. No,
100.
Sorry, because I should say Jose Cruz Jr. is doing a fantastic job at Rice now. I'm talking Rice 20 years ago, 10, 15 years ago, where they were putting out their pitchers 140, 150 pitches. No big deal. Oh, they're fine. They're fine. Okay.
I think initially Skeen's last bit was it 98 or was it 100? He's a freak. And one of the things that people aren't quite mentioning enough, I don't think this year, is it was like a juiced ball year in college baseball. The offensive numbers are absurd. So what he's done looks like, in any year, it looks like an awesome year of pitching. But when you consider it against what's been going on around the rest of baseball, it's really remarkable how well he's done. But people just are scared of pitchers now. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, the injury, the idea of injury has gotten in there. So let's move on to Lakeland. And Lakeland this week had the rains came in Lakeland. It's at that time of year, all of a sudden it starts raining a lot. And there we go. Teal went 4-for-5 with a double and a home run in the regional championship game versus East Carolina against Virginia. Thank you, Stan, for that. That is,
He went bonkers in that series against Georgia Tech, that where the Tigers brass was there. Like, he had an amazing series. Like, oh. So, yeah.
And then Sergio in our chat said, Tigers don't have a number one starting pitcher in their system. If Cruz and Langford are gone, you got to take Skeens. Can't imagine a high school battle over Skeens. Honestly, Sergio, if the Tigers weren't, the Tigers have been developing pitching from any round now. So I'm not predict, if they don't get him, I'm fine with that, because the Tigers have been able to, at least for the most part, develop their own pitch in the last several seasons. So I'm not, and as Stan mentioned, you have a bat like that. He hits from the left side. They need a bat. I'm sorry. They need a bat more than they need a pitcher. Well, I think you can go ahead, Chris.
They do. They need everything, but obviously the offense it's not good for the Tigers right now, and they need more bats in the system. It's just a matter of like where we think Scott Harris, his mentality comes from. He came up under Theo Epstein and the Cubs. And when the Cubs were doing their thing, they were always taking the best college bat available at the top of the draft. They passed up pitchers over and over again. And that kind of ended up backfiring on them because they won the World Series, but they couldn't develop a pitcher to save their lives. So they kept having to trade for pitchers, and that traded away Dylan Cease and guys like that to get the Jose Quintana, and it didn't work out for them. But I think that that's probably the way that Scott Harris leans. If you don't take a pitcher that high, because they break, you've got nothing. And they're more likely to break than position players. So it's just a kind of a numbers game there. But it'll be hard for me to pass up on a guy. Like, get him to the majors probably in 3 months.
Yeah.
Keynes.
Yeah. And I understand that. But at the same time, I think the difference between the Cubs and Tigers is the Tigers have been able to, under tutelage of Chris Fetter and the entire development staff, it's been pretty impressive. It's not, I know, like I said, just seeing guys at all levels performing just harmoniously to a certain extent, except for Lakeland, which we'll talk about here shortly, but West Michigan has been pitching better. You've seen things out of arms that are not just like top five round, top nine or whatever top of the draft guys are. And so to me, when you see, I'll give an example. A prime example was this with Willy Peralta. Willy Peralta wasn't much when he came here. Excuse me, it wasn't much when he came here. He came away with a better splitter, a change. He got better. His number, he was serviceable. Drew Hutchison was serviceable. I'm not saying these are all-star names or anything, but the Tigers found a way to use him. You could not say that about the Tigers 10 years ago. You couldn't say about the Tigers rarely ever in the last, since probably the year 2000, you cannot say as far as like Tigers developing players. Stan, really the police lack of the, please explain lack of development in Toledo this season. The only thing I could tell you is health, because either Toledo's had, I think, four or five guys on the IL. As far as development goes for pitching wise, Toledo has been never slated to have. You look at the rotation start of the year. Outside of Olsen, who else did they have? They had a bunch of minor league free agents because they had nobody else. So if you want to look at development, I would go more towards Erie than Toledo. Toledo, you had Hanafy, you had a bunch of bullpen arms they signed. Toledo had no real starting staff. As far as I'm concerned, Ashton, what's that guy's name?
Godot,
that was it. Castro, all these arms they brought in was just going to be a wave of arms that were going to ring up 75. Simple as that. That's just my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he's just talking pitching or if he's talking the hitters too, but yeah, it's Toledo's rough. And just like to put a ribbon on that whole point, who is the most exciting, most talented pitching prospect the Tigers have had in the last 4 years or so? I'll give you a hint. Yeah, he pitched today. He was a ninth rounder.
Yeah.
You can find guys like that. It doesn't happen all the time, but good teams find guys, find great arms. Bobby Miller, the Dodgers, they got him in the end of the first round. He's out there throwing 100 with four solid to above average breaker. If you have really good development, you can find these arms. There are a lot of guys who can throw hard and a lot of guys who have interesting abilities to spin the ball. You just got to find them and update them. It's rare to get a tailor-made potential ace teams. And if you have a chance to get them, I understand the temptation. I don't know. I think the Tigers probably want to take a bat and then maybe take a risk on maybe a younger arm or one of the other arms that they can get cheaper in the comp round, second round, third round, whatever, where it's not as much of an investment monetarily for them.
Yeah, I look at another arm like Mason Egler. They're able to identify him. No one ever heard of Mason Egler until the Tigers drafted him in the World 5 draft. They identified something. I'm saying they're doing a better job of identifying these things. And so whether it's Matt Whistler's throwing 800 sliders, whatever the case is, or chase retrieve, the Tigers have a different mode of operation when it comes to pitching. And that's why I think I would not worry about it. I understand why Sergio would think that, but I just feel like that maybe under Avila would probably see that. But honestly, I feel a lot better about the Tigers developing pitchers as a rookie.
Yeah. And Bradley said that Bradley Davis said, Tigers seem to not have confidence to draft a high school position player. I guess they don't think they will develop them properly. We used to think that was the case under Avila and David Chad.
Yeah.
They did. And they got Colt Keith as a fifth round high school player. But they never do this. And that one's worked out pretty well. But Mark Connor, the head of scouting now, drafted tons of high school players for San Diego, like 3 or 4 times as many as the Tigers did. And some of them worked out really well. You mentioned Jackson Merrill earlier. James Wood is a top 20 prospect. He called it Double A. Those guys were both in the same draft. So I don't think he's necessarily scared of taking a high school player. We also got to remember that we're 5 weeks away, and everything that we think we know right now might be completely wrong. The Tigers might be just trying to throw people off their set. Maybe they love Walker Jenkins. So they're just trying to like set people up for other things or did it bonus down? Who knows? We see this all the time. Every time we talk to these prospects, they tell us, oh yeah, I've heard a bunch of times that people's going to draft me. And then they just somebody else. We won't know until draft day. So just because they're out there scouting these college guys doesn't necessarily mean they're going to take them. But yeah, we'll see.
Andrew Miller brings up Justin Henry Malloy is still at 281 for us to put up a slash line and 796 career at bats. We probably shouldn't forget that. He has more protections in a legitimate MLB lineup against the off speed. That's a good point, Andrew. I still think that teams are going to do, for example, what they do with the Nick Maton. They're going to just go on 3 straight sliders and call it a day.
Yeah, but what's interesting, and we put this in our article about May stats, Malloy is doing just fine against right-hand pitching, like a 900 OPS. He's getting absolutely destroyed by lefty, which is not what you expect. Except the thing we identified very early on is he doesn't like breaking balls coming at him. Either right-handed breaking balls to like breaking into the inside of the plate or lefties throwing sliders at him. He can't hit him right now. And that's similar to Matt Vierling. And, you know, Vierling's got decent numbers. He gets right-handed pitching this year. He can't hit lefties to save his life. And I don't know. I don't know if it's a swing flaw, if it's just a statistical anomaly right now, but it's something to pay attention to. And let the Tigers have far more detailed information than we do.
Right.
They know where he's hitting in every zone and what he's doing against the next boss. They know everything. So other teams do, too. I'm sure they have those advanced scouting reports. Okay, we throw it right here. He can't do anything. I'm fascinated by... If you watch a game on the Game Day app, they have the nice hot and cold zone there for every batter. And you'll see Spencer Torkelson's cold zone, just an example, is down and away. And you'll see the opposing team throw 6 pitches right there. Like, they know exactly what they're doing. They know how to target these guys. Malloy's numbers have been solid overall. He's going to walk, got some pop, but he's got some flaws still that are going to get exposed if and when he does come up to the majors. Tough luck, dude.
Michael in the chat. I dated a girl who didn't like balls coming right at her. She said this at Cameron Yards, and the guy in front of me said, "Tough luck, dude."
Yeah. That's right out of Clueless, right? They're going through social life. Yeah. But Lakeland.
Tough luck for Andrew Peyton Graham, who Elton said something about that earlier. He went 2 for 10 this week, although he only appeared in 3 games. Jose De La Cruz, rough sledding as well. He went 3 for 20. But Dom Johnson, the smallest guy on the team, 2 home runs, 11 RBIs, 4 walks, 2 strikeouts, batted .421. That was nice. Archer Bookman.
Sneaky player of the week candidate. I didn't look to see who else might have put numbers this week, but that's a good week in the Florida State League.
Christian Santana. I'm sorry, folks. 0 for 12.
But with 6 walks and 5 strikeouts, he's a bizarre, bizarre player this year.
Yes. The regression is, I wish I had an explanation. I'm not going down the lake until next month. I'm trying to plan on maybe next month or August, but for now, I have no idea. People are asking us all the time. I really wish I had a better answer than this.
To me, the swing is just way too steep. It's looked like he's trying to get a pinata off the ceiling or something like that. It's not conducive to line drive contact.
It's quite a bit of a colorful analogy. I like that.
Well, I'm trying to think of, I wanted to say, oh, he's swinging at a bat flying around, but that gets confusing because of bats and bats. But yeah, it's he's obviously got a decent eye, but he's just swinging through everything, and it's a bummer. But he's so young. He's still 19. We're not going to close the door on him by any means. Just, I think we all got a little too excited last year when he hit. In retrospect, it probably should have been like hitting 215 probably isn't all that great. He was walking a lot. He was showing power, but hitting 215, not something to get super excited about. So we'll have to remember that this year.
Yeah. What sucks, by the way, is still they still don't have, what's his face, still on the IL. Reyes. No. It led the lead in home runs last year. Why am I drawing a blank?
Led the Florida State League in home run?
Yeah, led the Florida State
League. Oh, Manuel Sequeira.
Yeah, Sequeira. Thank you. Yeah. I couldn't think of it.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been out. We mentioned Abel Batistas coming in. I don't know. Dom Johnson has always been, he's intrigued me ever since they drafted him, just because of, he is like a little short, mighty Mike guy. He's short, but well-built, and he's very fast, although he doesn't have the best base-stealing instinct. But he's got 4 home runs in the season now, and I think 9-10 steals. And I think he leads the team in WRC+. Well, he may be a guy we see in West Michigan later this year.
Elvis Alvarado started his rehab assignment down in Lakeland. So he started that, I believe, today. Was that today?
Yesterday.
Yeah.
But he's down there rehabbing. Max Green is down there rehabbing. I did not check to see what Alvarado's velocity is. So let's do that real quick.
All right. We do that. I'll go over Cole Patterson. Okay. Cole Patterson. Patton had the best week in terms of just 5 innings, and no hits. 5 scoreless innings, 3 strikeouts. And there's, in terms of what we'll get to, there's not really much else to say about Lakeland's pitching this week. Jose Diaz, it's really not much to tell, but Andrew Miller or Chad was talking about, they all need to be up sooner or later, whether the Tigers want to or not. The Tigers, this lineup has no choice. Andrew, I think we were talking about this earlier. In the next few weeks, you're going to see some sort of changes. I think once the Erie first half season's over, once the first half of season, minor league season's over, you're going to see some stuff happening. Because at this point, they're going to have to, if the Tigers are going to try to stay competitive, they're going to do everything they can. And they're going to see what they have with their prospects. And they go to Philly, and Philly's record may not indicate, but Philly's at home is going to be a brutal. That's going to be a brutal 3 games. And then they come back to play the Diamondbacks, who are, we've talked about this. The Diamondbacks are no surprise to us because we were talking about they might are playing very well. They're playing better than people predicted, but they are a very good team. So the next week for the Tigers is going to be a brutal stretch. This whole month is, but
And when you can't score, it's tough to win. I'm really holding out hope that Cole Patton does some things so that you can flex your Photoshop skills and put them in there with the Patton movie.
Oh,
there he said, I want you to remember that no bastard ever lost a game. But all right, I'm looking up just now, getting to Elvis Alvarado's data. 735.
And how do you look?
Just 1 second.
Okay.
I was looking at Max Green was at 92-94, which is a little bit below, I think, Diaz in the bat. But all right, here we go. Elvis Alvarado, 5 swings and misses. He was not the hardest throwing pitcher in that game. That was Marco Jimenez, who touched 100.1, but he also gave up, I believe, 7 runs, which is not great.
They leave him out there. His stat line this week, 2 2/3 innings, 7 hits, 9 runs, hits a batter, 2 walks, and a strikeout. A nice whip of 3.38.
Yeah, that's a tough one. So Alvarado threw 22 pitches, 13 fastballs, 9 sliders. Got 5 whiffs, 3 on the fastball, 2 on a slider. Fastball averaged 96.5, touched 99. Slider averaged 86.5, got up to 87. Fastball average spin rate 24.87, 2600. That's a lot of spin on a 4-seam fastball. So,
how about that?
There you go. The nerdy numbers, but. So that's good. He's throwing just as hard as he always did. So that's good to see for health purposes. Probably see him in Erie. Maybe he'll work his way up in the system, but I bet he's in Erie in 2 weeks or so.
Yeah, probably. Probably same thing with Max Green. All right, Chris, do we have any questions this evening?
I saw a couple in on Twitter. I think that we may have touched on them all here in the chat, but let me go back through. We get to see. All right. So Pistons all day. We're going back down there. Yeah. Who can we bring up to fix this? Epic said, when do young Keith Perez get promoted? We want the Tigers to draft at 3.
I think we covered a lot of that today.
Yeah. One and Done Radio said, who can we bring up to fix this?
I
think he means Tigers, right? Who can we bring up? Nobody.
Nobody.
There's no fixes. Cole Keith would probably hit under 200 for a month before it figures things out. That could help, but it will probably be rough. Maybe he'd get off to a hot start and then they'd figure him out and he'd have to adjust. But I'm sure he's probably better than at least one of the bats they have in the lineup right now. But I don't know if they're ready to do that to him. I don't know. You have to add him under the 40 man and all that stuff. And yeah, then Pistons all day asked us 3 questions. What's Colt Keith's next step and when? What's holding Gage Workman back from being promoted? And what's Jackson Jobe's timeline? I've been out of the loop. So that's all is, except for maybe Gage Workman. What's holding him back from being promoted is that he's not hitting very well. He's hitting 240 with a 35% strikeout rate. Is that about right?
Yeah.
That's basically it. Yeah, if he could make more consistent contact, he'd be a monster, but he just can't, unfortunately. At least it seems that way.
So a couple of questions came through. Is Naporty done for the season or is he going to have a pull of Bryce Harper? Naporty's done. I've heard anything. He's pretty much, you'll see him next season.
He had Tommy John, right?
Yeah, he had Tommy John.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sucks because he's well-liked in the organization. And yeah. And then Sergio asks, are you willing to trade a few top 10, 15 prospects or few top 10 ranked between 10 and 15. Anyway, go ahead, Chris, because I'm losing my mind.
I would think, that Scott Harris would happily do that but only if it's not like rentals. He's not going to trade prospects to get slightly better this year, but this is not a great example because these guys haven't been good this year, but something more like Nathan Beerling, where you're getting guys with 4, 5, 6 years of control who might be able to help down the road. I'm sure he would be happy to part with a couple of prospects in the system that he doesn't particularly care for that much. Doesn't think that they're gonna. What?
Oh, sorry, yeah, my phone just randomly just. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to know that if anybody would even want. It's not a terrific system. I don't know who's out there begging to get a Wenzel Perez or somebody like that. Right? We've seen Perez move permanently to center field. He's looked okay out there, but he's also looked really raw out there. We saw him. He had a kind of a comical error today.
Oh, yeah. That was, yes.
It was the first thing with, he took a bad route because I think the ball was hit directly at him and it toppled on him. And he's just not used to playing the field. Then he picked it up as he was going to throw it. He accidentally threw it over towards the right fielder. It's like, it's a work in progress. But yeah. I don't know. Yeah. If Harris could move some of the minor leaguers for MLB talent, I'm sure he would and will. But I'm just not sure if teams are knocking down the target door for what they have.
And one last thing, too, before, because I forgot to mention it, or I was going to mention this earlier. Roberto Campos has had a field adventure in center field. Like, there's one thing that I know people will say. You guys post a lot of stuff on Twitter and what have you. But we've been hearing a little bit that he's been having a hard time out in the outfield, overrunning plays a little bit. So,
well, yeah. So it's an interesting case because we try to watch as much as we can, but then we also have what's happened this year is we can't go back and watch. We've got like a minute. You can go back, catch a play before we put it on Twitter, or else we have to wait till after the game. So we miss a lot of defensive plays or misplays. And unless it's like a run scoring play, sometimes we miss doubles, triples, things like that. And I've seen Roberto Campos make some nice plays in center field, like a handful of them. So I was like, hey, he's a much better defender. I've said it on the show, a much better defender than I thought. Then we went out there and saw, I was like, oh, he looked pretty good. And somebody was like, yeah, he looks like a butcher out there. I'm like, huh? And then sure enough, in that game, like 3 or 4 terrible defensive plays, like, uh-oh. And then this week, he was in right field and lost ball on the sun. I understand that. It, It's tough to have everybody.
He was in center.
He was in right. This was a different
ball. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
He lost the ball. Yeah, it was the Melton start. You can actually see it if you watch start. You can see it on our YouTube page. Lost the ball in the sun, got behind him. Happens to everybody, but as you know, you're an outfielder, you got to learn how to deal with that. And then the play that I think ultimately cost West Michigan the game the other night, he's playing center, line drive hit right at him, bridging in. And then it was very much like, oh no, he should try to jump up. And he's got a nice vertical, but not nearly enough. And it got over his head and then scored 3 runs. It was brutal timing for a misread. And yeah, you hope he seems like a fairly athletic dude. You hope he can get that ironed out. But some guys, I guess, just never quite have the instinct to play the outfield. So hopefully he can get that worked out because that would help.
Yeah, definitely go a long way. One last question before we get out of here. Henry Rankin wants to know, is Manning a TJ Tommy John candidate? It's been awfully quiet regarding his health. I think I saw him running on the field the other day. I think he's close to not coming back, but it was his foot. Yeah.
They mentioned him on the injury report that they put out. He's doing his rehab work. He's probably getting close to a rehab assignment before too long. Nothing wrong with his arm. Yeah, it was a broken toe from taking a liner. So every pitcher is a TJ candidate, but you're doing blow over there? What's going on?
Oh, no, I'm yawning.
You go there.
Oh, no, I just don't like yawning on camera because I don't want to be right. So I keep yawning. I'm like, yeah. If I was doing line of blow, I'd be a lot more hyper instead of yawning.
That might be another way to get rid of yawns.
Yeah, but also, I guess it's a...
Oh, my God. I don't know. We're talking about prospects for another 2 hours.
Let's go. Tell you right now. Hold future. Future. No, it's been a long weekend, and it's a little bit past 11.
Yeah, it's a little bit later.
Yeah, it's a little bit later. So it's
the case to victory.
Yeah,
it's after hours
here at Tiger Minor League Report here, and hopefully everybody's tuning in this evening. I'm DJ Pill Talk here, talking about your Tiger prospects here at 248-539. No, but I love that voice too well there. But at any rate, we'll be back on Thursday with another episode of I know the guys probably want to do something beforehand, but to be honest with you, what is there to say about the White Sox series? Not much. They got Tiger Talk ASMR. I learned what AMSR was at an episode. Chris is fired up like he's on blow. I learned what ASMR was at an episode of Beavis and Butthead. It was one of the funniest episodes of Beavis and Butthead I've ever seen. I was in tears because I had no idea what it was. I didn't know it was a thing where you do this and.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
I don't like it. I think it's weird. I guess people.
I've got
crack of the back.
I've got a weird opposite reaction, and it's very specific. When somebody like in commercials, when they try to crack open a beer and then pour it out,
yeah,
that whole all the sound they're trying to make it appetizing, and all it does is make me physically cringe and crunch up my neck, and I don't know why.
Really?
But it's my least favorite sound in the world. I hate it, and it's on all the time.
Does that commercial, does the push?
Yeah, I'm fine with the push. But if for the mountains of
push. I say, I feel like that sound like Michael.
I love Bob Ross. I can handle that. He's just whispering. It's not like scraping nails against plastic.
You have to do a little push here. You know, get a little prospect over here. Got some prospects over here. Got Jake Holden. Happy single. Happy single right there.
Yeah, I got some more.
Ernie Harwell. Sergio, with the Ernie Harwell ASMR. That ball is out to the fan, Jerry and Lansing there.
Something on the internet?
That foul ball was caught there by Jerry and Lansing there. And
I talked to Lulu last night.
Dr. Lulu.
Something on the internet? I'm doing walkie talk. Anyway.
This is going off the rails. It's getting towards the end of the night. Yep. He is Michael calls him the godfather of ASMR. Oh, man. You know what? Imagine George Kell doing ASMR. Hey, everybody. This is George Kell alongside my LK line. Yeah. That's a bad George Kell, but imagine George Kell's voice. Yeah, that would not with
Kell.
Oh, all right. Let's wrap this up. Thank you for listening. There'll be a written recap of the week 9 coming out tomorrow on TigersMLReport.com. There is an article that I've been neglecting that I was going to talk about the what's next among the next wave of prospects with the Riley Green injury and what the Tigers might do. So there's going to be some out. So if you want to support us again, patreon.com/TigersMLReport or go to our PayPal. We also have a PayPal link that you can support the link. Thank you so much for our donations this evening. Bloodwright doing the Lord's work. Elton, thank you. Everybody who's thank you for everybody. And by the way, I also want to thank everybody for one more thing. The Tiger Mountain Report podcast is so we have that on. We actually outranked for the first time ever the Motor City Metrics podcast. I've been doing that podcast now for six or seven years. And this show we started doing a few years ago. Last year we didn't do it consistently. We've been doing it consistently this year. And as a result, we were ranked among the top 125 prospects podcasts in the baseball category on iTunes. So thank you for everybody who's been tuning in every week and checking us out on Apple Podcast. And don't forget, Sunday, July 9th is the MLB Draft Show. We'll be doing the entire first round. That includes the Tigers pick at number 37. We'll be giving you draft coverage, wall-to-wall draft coverage the entire time. We're going to have special guests. It's going to be a fun time. And if there's going to be an outrageous pick, I get to go slash in a pool. Mm-hmm. So, Everett, great night. What's up, Chris?
I just want to say, yeah, thank everybody for the donations. We almost, because of your donations, we almost drove to Dayton today.
See, yes.
Very doable.
Thank you.
Which is a 3-hour-plus drive both ways. We thought we were like, we could do that. But I thought that there was a chance that he would only pitch like 2 innings. We were driving 6 hours. And sure enough, 12 pitches for Scooble. We would have driven 6 hours to get 12 pitches for Scooble, which, hey, would have been fun. I didn't know if it was the best use of our resources. We haven't even discussed this, but I'm thinking because there's no TV in Lake County, when the Whitecaps go to Lake County at some point this year, we may take a trip down there just to get video for you guys because you've made it so we can.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea because, yeah, Lake County, they even had a visiting broadcast too. Lake County was in town 2 weeks ago. They didn't bring anybody. And I think the guys at Lake County, we have some friends over the Cleveland Guardians prospect side of things. Justin, Pat, there's Willie over there. So those guys are doing a fantastic job. Good meetup. So have a great night, everybody. We'll talk to you Thursday. And again, don't forget, go to TigersMLBReport.com. Check out all the great content over there. And we'll see you. That was an abrupt ending.